we're okay mentally. We have a lot of things to work on. Coach Brewer's message is that we have the athletes, right? We just have to work on getting like our fundamentals and just executing the game plan. So this week, this bye week, we're actually going to work on our fundamentals a lot. And anyone who's banged up, just work on getting them healthy.
That's Tennessee cornerback Alante Taylor describing the mental state of the Tennessee football team at this point. Hey, welcome back to hour number two of Sunday Sports Sound Off. I'm Jimmy Himes, along with VFL Tim Irwin, who joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates hotline. Let's go back to the phones where Andrew has waited patiently. Andrew, you're on Sports Sound Off.
Good morning, guys. This is Andrew from Virginia calling you.
All right.
Good morning. Well.
I want to make a couple of points, and then I'll get to my question. First of all, I want to say that I totally disagree with the previous caller. I think you guys do an outstanding job of pointing out what the players did well, what the coaches did well in the previous game. So I don't know where that's coming from. I think you guys are very equitable, and you do an outstanding job with that. So I just wanted to emphasize that. I love listening to the show. And I've been a lifelong Vol fan for over 45 years. I was not delusional with this season. I did not expect us. Realistically, I was thinking we might go 6-4 or possibly 7-3. And the reason I say that is because we were going to be playing 10 SEC games. That's a tough schedule. So, you know, I think sometimes the fans have their expectations way too high. So I wanted to emphasize that. The final thing that I want to say, and I want to ask my question to you guys about this, and I'm going to be honest with you, I don't think we're getting good coaching from the offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach. And the reason I say that is I was listening to Paul Feinbaum, and I think it's Raymond Foster,
Ramon Foster, the former Tennessee offensive lineman?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
He was commenting on Feinbaum on Friday. And I think he had a pretty good perspective. He talked about how when the Steelers lost Ben Roethlisberger, that the coaches, when they had to fill in with their backups, they put that player in a box. And they designed things around what they did well and what they didn't do well. And I don't see that with Garantano. The thing that puzzles me is I think Garantano was recruited as a dual threat quarterback, and I have not seen him run the ball that much, but he does run the ball well when he does run it. And so I'm just wondering why we don't design more plays around his strengths. For example, why don't we have any bootlegs or possible option and things of that nature? And then the other thing I've noticed he does well, he throws a deep ball really well. And I agree with you, Jimmy. He's late on a lot of throws. And I think that's a reflection of the quarterback coaching. And the final thing I'll say with that is I think Burrow and the kid from Alabama – the progression they showed from last year to this year, I think that is directly related to the quarterback coaching and the schemes being designed around them. So I'll just get your all's opinion on those.
Okay. I do think that Garantano throws a really good deep ball. He did it yesterday. He's done it throughout his career. I don't think he throws the shorter passes as accurate. A lot of times you want to, Andrew, when you're throwing it to a back or an underneath route, you want to make sure they catch it in stride, right, so that they can run with the ball after the catch. He doesn't throw that pass very well. I don't know, and as far as the timing of it, and Andrew, I appreciate the phone call, as far as him throwing it late, Tim, do you think that is a product of not being coached well, or do you think that's a product of Garantano just not anticipating as well as he needs to?
It looks to me like where he struggles is the progressions that occur during the play. And I don't know how much freedom he has right now. But, for example, on the run-pass option, whether to run it or throw it, what happens if the first receiver's covered? That's the areas I see him struggling in. And I haven't sat down and put Jim Chaney on the spot and ask him point blank how he does in those situations. He also should be more elusive than he is. It seems like when they rush him, they get him. And he was supposed to be a dual threat quarterback coming out of high school, and that hadn't really progressed. He's run less every year that he's been here. And he took some shots early on in his career. I don't know if that affected him or not. He hadn't taken as many this year. I think he's done a better job anticipating the blitzes. But I couldn't believe Alabama did not blitz him yesterday. I could not believe that.
I would
blitz him if I was playing him. I would try to smack him around early in the game and force some bad decisions. But I think his trouble is more of a game time thing. I think you can coach somebody and coach the heck out of them, but when they get out there on Saturday, they got to make the right call. You can't make the calls during the game. You can't say if receiver one or two are covered. You know, you need to be throwing. You can't make them do all those things. They got to pick it up and do it themselves. I think that's where we've had our trouble. I think his arm strength's fine.
Yeah. Tim, there are times when I've watched him scramble and he looks kind of awkward and he doesn't look like he's anything like a dual threat. And then I'll see him make a couple of runs like he did yesterday where he picked up 9 yards and 12 yards and he shows some semblance of some running ability. I'm not sure if I quite understand why. But and maybe you're not seeing the same thing, but I see him as not very good in the pocket scrambling, and yet when he takes off, I see a guy that every now and then he looks like a decent runner.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he made two really good decisions late in that game where he took off and made first downs. I thought he did. I thought too. And he does that sometimes. Sometimes he doesn't. I don't know why. I don't think Jim Chaney or Chris Winkie know why. That's my personal opinion. I don't think they know why.
Sometimes
the switch flips on and it's good. Sometimes it stays off and it's not good. Don't know. I think you could describe his career as just being inconsistent.
Yeah.
You're not sure what you're going to get from week to week.
Yep. All right, let's go to Jay. Jay, you're on with Tim Irwin.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Morning, Jay.
Guys, the last caller, for example, talked about fans and maybe unrealistic expectations. And I've heard some comments from people saying, well, what did you expect to happen yesterday? And to me, Jimmy and Judge, that's the whole issue here, is when people say stuff like that, we can't even expect to compete with our rivals anymore. And that's where I think a lot of Tennessee fans are just almost, I don't want to say given up, but they're just becoming apathetic to all this. We're going on 15 years of just pure crap. I mean, the program has been terrible for 15 years, basically.
Well, Jay, you said basically. There were a couple of 9-win seasons under Butch Jones who I thought were pretty good years, but you may see that differently. That's okay.
Okay, let's go to that. 9-win seasons where we blew the SEC East. We couldn't even – we finally get a win against Florida and Georgia, and we still couldn't get to the SEC. And that's the two best years that you can point out.
That's correct.
Our rivals own us. They own us. The Philip Fulmer said the three games you're judged by at Tennessee are Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. And – they own us. I mean, and it looks like there's no end in sight, because we as a program, we don't look like we're anywhere near a functioning program to even compete with those teams, Jimmy. And where I'm just sick and tired as a fan at, Jimmy, is if I even said I think Tennessee is going to really compete with Alabama today, I would get laughed at. I mean, that's where we're at as a program. For the last probably 15 years, people would laugh at me if I said that. And it's just, when is this going to end?
I don't know.
And Jimmy, you may know this better, because you know this stuff a lot better than I do. But in the modern day era, because back in the day, coaches used to get a lot more chances. Like Johnny Majors, for example, he didn't get off to a great start, but Tennessee stuck by him.
Right.
Coaches used to get longer times to turn programs around.
Right.
But in the modern era, do you know of a coach that has got off to the kind of start that Jeremy Pruitt's got off to and then ended up being a championship-type coach or just a really good coach? Because I was sitting there thinking, and I really can't think of one. I may be missing something. But
when does your modern era start? Is it 1980 going forward?
Well, I would say, you know, maybe like 90s going forward. You know, that's what I would say. Because back in the 80s and the 70s, you know, people got a lot longer to turn programs around. But I would say 90s up until now, I couldn't really think of one.
Well, I was going to give you Frank Beamer, who was in the 80s. That's where he started. And his career, he was like his first 6 years, he had a very bad record before he got turned around. To your point, They're not many. And you said championship. So, gosh, Lou Holtz first year
at
South.
SEC championship.
Or at least East Division or a conference or a division championship.
Something.
I do remember Lou Holtz started out 0-11 at South Carolina, and then maybe a couple of years later he won 10. Didn't win the division, but that's a pretty decent turnaround. You don't see a lot of it. I can't sit here and name you a bunch of guys that have done that, but you don't see a lot. Beamer's one of the best examples I can think of.
What do you think about that stat that Josh Ward tweeted out about Jeremy Pruitt has lost 12 games by 21 points or more in his first 30 games, and Butch and Dooley only did 6 apiece? What do you think about that, Jimmy?
That is not a very positive reflection of Jeremy Pruitt. The other stat that's not very positive is he's now 0-8 against those three rivals. His average margin of defeat is over 28 points. Butch Jones started 0-7. His average margin of defeat was 10.1. So here's Jay. I don't think Tennessee is going to get out of this rut until they find a top-notch quarterback. I don't know if they can get a Joe Burrow or a Mac Jones, but they got to get somebody that plays at a very high level, maybe a Kyle Trask level, before they get out of this. I think that's a big problem at this point. I think some of the play calling yesterday that was conservative is because they were trying to protect a quarterback they don't trust.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's my opinion. But until Tennessee gets better at that position, I think they will continue to struggle to meet the expectations or the hopes. Now, I don't think 6-4 was an unrealistic expectation this year. That's where I had them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's unrealistic at all. But
I said 6-4 would be a good season.
Yeah. So now I was 6-4 leaning toward 5-5 because I thought because of the quarterback situation they would have a difficult time exceeding 6 wins. That was my opinion. You know, we'll see.
Well, I'll just say this. I'll hang up. I want Pruitt to work here. I actually like Pruitt. I didn't like Butch. I thought he was corny and he just didn't fit here. I think Pruitt fits here culturally.
Yeah.
So I hope it works, but it just seems like we go through the same cycle every single time with these coaches, and it's just starting to get old. Thanks, guys.
I don't disagree with that. Tim, what's the key to getting out of this? Is it quarterback play? Is it much deeper than that? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think quarterback play would help, Jimmy. I think that would help a bunch. That's such a big part. I can remember, particularly in the pros, as a lineman and going out and having a good day, giving up no pressures, no sacks, handling my guy, and getting beat 48-6. And I can remember going out and having a day where I gave up a couple of pressures or a sack and the quarterback playing great and winning 48-6. Sometimes what everybody else does doesn't matter as much when the quarterback's playing great. And when the quarterback's playing bad, your mistakes are magnified too. It's such an important position, and I think we have to have more consistent play at that spot to get to the next level. We've also got to develop some pass rushers. You can't expect defensive backs to run around back there forever trying to cover wide receivers like they were facing yesterday. You've got to get some pressure on the quarterback. Can't let him stand in there like a young Tom Brady, never moving his feet, just standing there and standing there and unloading. Usually he didn't have to stand there that long because somebody was running open somewhere. But I think you got to have dominant pass rushers and you got to have good quarterback play to succeed in the SEC. And right now I don't think we're there in either category.
Yeah. All right, let's work in Michael ahead of a break. Hello, Michael.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I have a couple questions. One is, on our offense, we've been talking about the quarterback, and I know it doesn't seem like Coach Winkie's doing what is expected of him, but we have T. Martin sitting there as a wide receivers coach. Why not pull him back to work with the quarterback, because he was a great quarterback, and is such a good quarterback in Catholic right now?
I don't know if that's been a consideration or not. I will say this, just because you're a good quarterback doesn't mean you're a good quarterback coach. Now, I'm not saying T. Martin wouldn't really be a good quarterback coach, but I don't necessarily know that the two are, coincide. I don't know if there's any consideration for that.
Okay.
Don't know. But,
well, my second question is this.
Okay.
I was going to say, it seems like every week on our defense that they have no idea behind what they're doing, what play calling they need to run, and we always seem to have to call the timeout because we either have too many players on the field or not enough.
Yeah, that's a
and
problem.
And I'm not sure if that's fair.
Okay. Thanks, Michael. Tim, your reaction to that, because Tennessee's had to call a lot of timeouts, and sometimes they don't look like they're as organized on defense as they need to be.
Yeah, and I see that as a pretty common phenomenon. You used to never see defensive timeouts. There was at one time a theory that it's better to take the penalty than lose the timeout. But now with offenses going hurry up, you see it more and more. I noticed during the game, Saban really got hot over defensive personnel.
Yeah.
And shoot some guys out on the sideline. Same thing happened even to, you know, Alabama as well as they're playing. I think it's a product of the hurry up offenses and guys, sometimes when you have a big lead, you relax and your head's not in the game in their case. But in our case, yeah, I think there's been a little too much of it. I agree with the caller. There's been too many times we've had to call timeout because we weren't in the correct personnel. And that's organization, and it's not good.
That's Tim Irwin. He joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. I'm Jimmy Himes, and we come back, we'll have more. To join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. You're listening to Sunday Sports Sound Off.
Most definitely. I'm not saying that just because it's the right thing to say, but I truly believe that that's true. We have the players for it, and everyone wants to win. When we come to practice, I mean, we can talk about every other game, but when it comes to Alabama, you know, practice, we're a little bit more focused. But I just feel like we're doing everything right. Coach is bringing in great coaches, and we're bringing in great players.
That's Tennessee cornerback Alante Taylor. When asked about, did he agree with Coach Pruitt that Tennessee is closing the gap on Alabama? Welcome back to Sunday Sports Sound Off with VFL Tim Irwin. I'm Jimmy Himes. Regarding a previous question we had, Brent Hubbs brought this to my attention. It's a good point. Talking about coaches that did not start out very well and then did a great job, I'll tell you one of them, Nick Saban. Nick Saban, his first 4 years at Michigan State, his records were 6-5-1, 6-6, 7-5, 6-6. That's 25-22-1. He had one good year at Michigan State. He went 9-2 in year five, and that's when LSU hired him. So that would probably be a pretty good example about what a previous caller was asking in regard to a coach not starting out well and then turning into a championship-caliber coach. All right, let's go to David. David, you're on Sports Sound Off.
Good morning, Jimmy. Good morning, Judge Irwin.
Good morning.
The reason for my call, and by the way, Saban's first year at Alabama and part of his second year, he kind of got off to a rough start too, just as a FYI. So about 3-4 years ago, I was watching the Georgia-Alabama SEC championship game, and one of the announcers brought up an interesting statistic about Alabama going into that game, and I may be off just a tad, had like 45 sacks, Georgia had 40, and it kind of started my curiosity. So I went back And I'm at utsports.com right now, and I'm going to talk about a different stat and why this is important. So, and Jimmy, I would encourage you to kind of follow up on this.
Okay.
If I went back 15 years with just Tennessee football, the only time that Tennessee went to bowl games is if they had a minimum of 28 sacks. And it's an amazing, you can look at all the other statistics, but that's the one that year in and year out, Tennessee gets at least 28 sacks, they go to a bowl game. I always found that interesting. So this morning, and I'm at utsports.com right now, and this is includes statistics from the Alabama game. So Tennessee's averaging 22.2 points a game. Our opposition is averaging 33 points a game. As far as rushing first downs, we have 41. Our opponents have 39, okay? Now, here's where it gets kind of interesting. It's the passing yards that we're getting blistered at, okay? So the total passing yard or total offense, through five games, our opposition has over 2,000. We barely have over 1,600. They have almost 1,300 yards passing, okay? So versus 765 rushing. The reason why those stats are important is, and if you look at time of possession through five games, they're averaging having the ball a little over 33 minutes a game. We're averaging 26. But we only have 8 sacks, and 3 of those were from Mr. Johnson in the first game. So, Judge Irwin, alluding to something that you said earlier, I mean, I agree with you 100%. We cannot have defense. I mean, our defensive, I don't care who you put back there. You could put Ronnie Lott. You could put an all-pro defensive backfield back there at safety and defensive backs. If you're not getting a pass rush and you're not getting sacks, they're going to get beat also. And I think, and, you know, we're not getting any push from the defensive line. And we don't have, if you look at those years where we had the 28 sacks or more, we at least had one prominent rusher. Look at the rushers from last year that aren't there, okay? So, you know, I realize we have a lot of problems as a whole, but to me, to build Tennessee's success in the future, not only requires the quarterback that y'all are talking about, but it requires that we have a sound defensive line that can put pressure and get sacks. So just wanted your thoughts on that. And, Jimmy, like I said, I'm not perfect, but if you get a chance to review that, you might find that an interesting stat for a future discussion.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I will correct you on something about Nick Saban, his second year at Alabama. They went 8-0, won the West Division, and lost to Florida in the SEC championship game. They were 12-2. So
I got you.
His second year. Now, the first year, you're right. I think they were 7-6 and lost to Louisiana Monroe.
But, yep.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, Jimmy.
Thanks for the call. That's a good point. Tim, your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's what we talked about earlier. I think Jeremy Pruitt said it. I think somebody mentioned it on the broadcast on yesterday. You know, the best pass defense is a good pass rush. And 8 sacks after 5 ball games is not enough. We got to get there somehow. And it's like my story about Coach Majors. If you can't cover him, you might as well blitz. We don't seem to be doing a lot of man coverage and blitzing. And if we can't get there with the guys we got up front, you can't play a zone unless you got guys that can rush a passer without the aid of a blitzer. And if we can't get it done that way, we're going to have to play some man and blitz. We'll probably get burned for some big plays down the field. We got to have more heat back there, that's for sure. You can't I think that stat's very telling. I was a little bit surprised at that 28 number, but I think that stat is very, very telling. And I think it's accurate as to what I'm seeing. We got to have more heat. Got to have more heat on the opponent's passer.
Yeah, that I did not know that. That was an interesting stat that David had. Appreciate him bringing that up. All right, let's go to Jimmy. Jimmy, you're on with Tim Irwin.
Morning, Jimmy and Tim.
Morning,
Jimmy.
Morning.
Morning.
What was the comment that Coach said, Jimmy, after the game?
Well, he made a lot of them, but one comment he made was that I'll tell you two of them. One, He said they're closing the gap on Alabama. Secondly, okay. I said, are these results discouraging? He said, no, they're not discouraging. I'm not discouraged. The players are not discouraged, but we are frustrated. Those are two.
Okay. The one where he said he's closing the gap on Alabama.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Yeah. I think the line was like 22, and they got beat by 31.
Yeah, and it started out at 19 and a half.
It started at 19, I think, yeah. So I don't see that. Another thing, guys, Tim, you can comment on this. I don't see any leadership. You know, you got to have field coaches, people who can see the field, see the plays themselves, but being that general on the field. I don't see that, Tim, that get in other players' face when they make a mistake.
And I see it, Jimmy, a little bit. I see a couple of guys. I mean, I see a couple of guys. I see Trey Smith. I think he's kind of a leader. And I see Henry Toa-Toa.
He's a lineman.
Yeah, linemen can be leaders.
Yeah. Okay.
But, I mean, that's the two I see that show some leadership ability. We could use more guys that did that. I agree with you. Doesn't seem to be a lot of leading.
Quarterback should be the number one leader, correct?
Some of them are, some of them aren't. He's got to take on the responsibility of getting them in the right play and getting the ball where it needs to be, making the right checks, making the right reads. So, yeah, there's a lot of leadership involved in that position. But he doesn't have to be the fiery leader of your team. That can come from anywhere.
Right.
But those are the two guys I've seen that seem to show some leadership. I think Gray's had a nice year, and I think he shows leadership by the way he plays the game. I think he plays hard. And I don't have much fault with him this year. I think he has emerged as clearly the best of our running backs. And I think those three guys, it'd be hard-pressed for me to find anybody else I could put in that category.
Hey, Jimmy, another question.
Yes, sir.
The defense, when we have let me get my train of thought here. When we are playing what is the individual coverage on receivers?
Man to man.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think you brought this up last night where we're not up on the line with the receiver. In other words, we're giving them a little bit of a gap.
Yes. I thought on slant.
I hate that.
Okay. Yeah, I think some of the slant routes that opponents have had success with against Tennessee. Tennessee was not in the receiver's face. They gave him a cushion. They ran a slant route without any impediment toward the running the route, and it made it easy on them to hit those slant routes. That's what I thought, in particular against Kentucky.
Right. And Jeremy is, I mean, a lot of people are saying, you know, he's a disciple. I hate using that word disciple of Nick Saban because that's more of a biblical term. He's from the Nick Saban camp. But I don't see it. I mean, I'm sorry. I just don't see it. So.
Okay. Jim, we appreciate it. Thanks
for
the call.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. We're talking about leadership. Let's hear from Matthew Butler because he was asked, how do you make sure the team responds the right way after this Alabama loss?
You know, when it comes to leadership, like it's not all about getting in front of a lot of people and saying a lot of galvanizing things. Sometimes you just got to know the guys who you're standing next to, talk to them individually, know what galvanizes them, know what gets them going, speak to them. And then there's some guys you got to get in their face. There's some guys you got to talk to them privately And there's some guys that, you know, they hear that galvanizing message, or maybe they just see me doing what's right, and they follow suit. And I also expect that any one of my teammates, if they ever saw me doing anything that was out of line when it comes to the game of football, correct me. And, you know, that mindset collectively, consistently, can make us take leaps and bounds when it comes to responding to this unfortunate set of circumstances.
That's defensive lineman Matthew Butler. We'll respond to him when we come back. We need to get a break. You can continue to join us by calling 656-9900. With VFL Tim Irwin, who joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline, I'm Jimmy Himes. This is Sunday Sports Sound Off.
Time.
Like I said, we just got to capitalize on opportunities. We got to work on our fundamentals, you know. Just, like I said, being in the right place at the right time and then just making a play.
That's Alante Taylor, Tennessee defensive back. Welcome back to Sunday Sports Soundoff. I'm Jimmy Himes with Tim Irwin. I want to bring you some comments from Jeremy Pruitt. We've touched on it, but we haven't heard directly from him in regard to some of the topics we're talking about. So here's Jeremy Pruitt post-game. What do you make of the results you've had against Alabama, Georgia, and Florida during your Tennessee tenure?
To be honest, they've been better than us. It's plain and simple. You know, if we were better than them and lost the games, I would say that. They've been better than us. We've played with them in spurts, but from a execution finishing standpoint, we've not been able to sustain and do that, you know. So when I look at our team, I really like our team, our makeup. Got a lot of young guys that are going to have a chance to be really good players. And as they grow and develop, we'll continue to close that gap there.
Should the results against Alabama still be this drastic?
You know, as a fan, no, it shouldn't. As a coach, no, it shouldn't. I promise you, I don't want it to be that way. You know, for us to beat these guys today, we needed to play really clean football. We needed a couple of things to go our way. That's the truth of the matter. I think a great indication of talent level when you look at your team is look and see who gets drafted, you know. So we have a lot of young guys on our team, and we got some older guys on our team that are continuing to improve. We got to execute at a little higher level, obviously, on both sides of the ball to give ourselves a chance. And the last half of this season will be a great opportunity to see where we're at as far as these guys doing that.
Jeremy, are you discouraged at all by the gap between you and Alabama at this point?
You know, Jimmy, I was on the other sideline 3 years ago. You think I didn't see that? All right. And I can assure you that the gap is closing. It might not show on the scoreboard today, but the gap is closing. I can assure you that. And that's one thing that's frustrating to me. And it's frustrating to our players. Okay. Is there's times that we've done some really good things, but as a team, whether it's, you know, offense playing really good and the defense playing really good and special teams, we've not put any of that together. And that's what the elite teams in our program and are in our conference, that's what they do. Okay. They don't have many bad plays. They don't make many mistakes. They make the other team beat them. And there's times that we've done that this year, but we've not done it for a whole game, even the games we've won, right? We've not done that. So, this will be a great opportunity this next week to go back and see where we're at, to see where we've improved. And from that, we'll have an opportunity to kind of fix the things moving forward.
How do you keep the players from getting discouraged?
They're not discouraged, okay? They're not. Our players are not discouraged. All right? Our players live in the reality. All right? The fact that, you know, these guys came back when nobody in the country was playing football but the SEC, they came back not knowing what the hell was going to happen, what this virus does. They didn't know any of that, right? And they came back and went to work. unfortunately, along the way, some of them got it. Okay. And we've learned a lot about ourselves through this. And I can tell you that we're not discouraged. There's nothing that's discouraging about in our locker room. We're discouraged, or we're really probably frustrated would be the right word, that we're not playing the way we expect to play. And I think part of fixing it is recognizing it. And so I saw a lot of improvement from a lot of players today, but it's going to take all of us, okay, to play at a high level to beat those guys.
That's Tennessee coach Jeremy Pruitt. Tim, your reaction to the things that Pruitt said?
I'm not sure what specifics he's referring to in closing the gap. Looked like a pretty sound thrashing. It looked like still a pretty wide gap to me. Maybe we're able to run the ball some at times. Maybe he's referring to that. I really don't know what he's referring to, because it looked to me like we were dominated just about every way you could be dominated. And when I say something like that, I want to make it real clear that I have the utmost respect for the guys that are down there fighting the fight. I mean, I love Tennessee football. I look at them as little brothers, and it's not easy to say bad things about their performance. But I still want to try to be honest. And honestly, I got to disagree with him. I don't see us closing the gap very much. And I don't really know what statistic or what result you could point at and say that we've closed the gap on Alabama after getting whomped like we did yesterday.
All right, let's go back to the phones, where Woody is our next caller. Woody, you're on Sports Sound Off.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Got a couple of comments, and yeah, I'm sure glad we got an open date next week. Maybe they can work on the linemen holding their stance and not getting penalized, and our defensive backs quit bumping people and make some tackles. But I want to make a comment. Before we get on Chaney and Winky so much, you can't make orange juice out of a grapefruit, guys. Y'all remember Bobby Roper?
Yes.
Bobby Roper was a friend. He came down here from Pittsburgh with Johnny, worked for him for 9 years. He told me a couple of comments that it stuck with me ever since. Is one, football is 80% recruiting, and the other 80% is your quarterback, bud. He said, if you don't have a trigger man, the gun don't go off. It's just imperative, guys, and we're not there.
No argument for me. I don't think that they are there where they need to be at quarterback. I think it's imperative going forward that somebody, I guess more likely Harrison Bailey or maybe Caden Salter, can be the answer at quarterback. Because if neither one, and I haven't seen enough out of Stroud or Maurer to make me think they are the answer, then Tennessee's in trouble. They have got to find better quarterback play, which I think would help everything. I think it would help your offense. Your offense could then help your defense. I think it would give the team more confidence going into games if they were better at that position. So I think so much of the success for Tennessee going forward has to do with whether they can find a good to great quarterback.
It's imperative those two guys hopefully got to come around. And offense, if we have that, then they won't wear the defense out so much either.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, thank you. All right. I tell you what, ahead of a break, let's try to work in Phillip. Phillip, you're on Sports Sound Off.
Hey, guys. Hey, just a few bullet points real quick. One, I didn't advocate for Bailey to start yesterday because I think they would have beat the living daylights out of him. But I think where Jeremy has exposed himself is that he recruited the quarterbacks that are behind Bailey. And those two – they've not been developed, and that's coaching. If we're in year three and they're not improving, then that's on coaching, whether it's Pruitt or Winky, whatever. And then two, unfortunately, the scoreboard points to how far the gap is closing, And, you know, unfortunately, it boils down to wins and losses. And so I don't advocate Pruitt getting fired. I think he is the man long term. Legitimately, he's opened himself up to exposure that he's got to find an answer for.
Okay. Thanks for the comments, Philip. Tim, one thing that you look at is three of these quarterbacks on the roster were recruited by Jeremy Pruitt and his staff. And so I would say that certainly the responsibility comes down to them as far as the quarterbacks going forward. I don't know if anyone is the answer, but I think Philip makes a fair point. These are Garantano was under Butch Jones, but these other three were under Philip the other one under Jeremy Pruitt. They've got to take a step forward at that spot.
You got to, you got to own that situation. I mean, they're your guys. Maybe you didn't have every advantage you needed that first class when you were trying to recruit. You came in late and the class was sort of suspect. But, you know, you're supposed to have recruited pretty well the last couple of years. Let me throw something out there, Jimmy. Oftentimes when Tennessee had some of their best historic pass rushers, who was coaching the defensive line?
Dan Brooks.
No kidding. He's not busy right now, is he?
I haven't checked his schedule, but he is not in coaching.
Yeah. So. Boy, I mean, what a great defensive line coach and the product he turned out at Tennessee and Clemson. Yep. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just really had a lot of guys that he could recruit and he could coach them when he got there. And he could coach big guys. He could coach edge rushers. I mean, he could do it all. He is a good defensive line coach. Maybe we ought to get some advice from Dan on who we should be bringing in. But he could flat get it done.
Yeah, he sure could. I would second that statement. Absolutely. All right, when we come back, it'll be our final segment. We will talk a little bit about Tennessee going forward. We'll talk about the open date and the things that they need to accomplish during that time frame. With Tim Irwin, who joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline, I'm Jimmy Himes. This is Sunday Sports Handoff.
I think we can finish this season strong because we're a resilient team, you know. We got punched in the mouth the past 3 weeks, you know, and it hurts, but we're on a team full of quitters, and we showed that last year. Unfortunately, again, we have to show it again. So, you know, we're gonna come back stronger.
As Tennessee senior receiver Josh Palmer, when asked if Tennessee can finish strong again in the second half of this season as it did a year ago. Welcome back to Sunday Sports Sound Off. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Tim Irwin. Want to bring you one more comment from Pruitt and then get reaction. Pruitt was asked in the press conference last night, what is your message to the fans?
Nobody's more disappointed than the people within our program, I can assure you. Okay. So, you know, it's the reason that I wanted this job. Okay. It's because I understood the passion, the energy, the expectations of Tennessee football. Okay. When I took the job, I knew exactly where it was at. Exactly. Okay. Which is why I wanted the job. Okay. I wanted this job because I wanted to get it to where it's supposed to be. It's a hell of a challenge, and I'm glad I took the job. I'm excited about being here. I'm not discouraged. The people in our program are not discouraged. I know where our program's headed, and we'll get there.
Comments from Jeremy Pruitt. Tim Irwin, what would your message be to the Vol Nation?
Good question, Jimmy. Let me think just a second. I would have to say, I think it's okay to be impatient, but don't lose your, you know, don't lose your love for Tennessee and your enthusiasm when they do good things, you know, still be behind them when they go out there. Don't lower your expectations. Continue to hope they're striving for excellence and continue not to demand excellence. I don't think you got that right as a fan, but want excellence and, you know, stay motivated and continue to act like you care. It's tough when two of your rivals beat you, and then you lose to your longtime whipping boy in Kentucky. The last 3 weeks have been pretty tough on us all, but, you know, remember it's Tennessee, and if you love Tennessee, you'll be out there cheering for them in 2 weeks when they do it again.
One discouraging thing I saw was Kentucky got beat by Missouri 20-10 and gained 145 yards.
I saw that, too.
47. Yeah. All right, Tim, open date. We got about a little over a minute left. What should Tennessee try to accomplish during the open date?
Just work on the basic fundamentals. Get healthy. If you got some young players, get them ready to go. Work on pass rushing, blitz packages, and better coverage, and work on your timing between your quarterback and receivers. I'd ask you what's not out there to work on right now, Jimmy.
Yeah.
What I'd ask.
Yeah. One person was saying, well, you need to start playing all your young players. And Pruitt said, I'm not playing them until they earn the right to play. You agree with that philosophy?
I think we need to have our best 11 on the field at any given time, whoever that is, be it senior, freshman, walk on, scholarship, doesn't matter. Just get your best 11 out there. And let's use this next week and a half to figure out who those are for sure. Maybe we got to make some adjustments. Maybe we don't, but let's figure it out.
And I think they need to beat Arkansas. That's big. So we'll see if they can.
And you know what? That's going to be – Pittman's got those guys going.
He sure does.
They're playing pretty good football, and we know he's a good football coach from his time here.
Right.
So. Right.
Hey, Tim Irwin, thank you so much. I always appreciate you joining us. We'll visit with you again in 2 weeks.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Tim. VFL Tim Irwin joining us on the Stanley Fencing Gates Hotline. We thank those that call. We thank those that listen. This has been Sunday Sports Sound Off.
You've been listening to the longest-running sports talk show in the state of Tennessee. On the air for over 50 years, it's Sunday Sports Sound Off. Brought to you by your volunteer Toyota dealers. Fox Toyota, Green's Tractor, Knoxville Orthopedic Clinic, Great Clips, Iris Networks, TVA Energy Right Solutions, Oak Ridge Nissan, Pipe Ridge Plumbing, Jim Cogdell Dodge, the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, your local volunteer GMC dealership, Wow Cable, the U.S. Army, and Rusty Wallace Kia on Callahan. This is Tennessee Football on 107.7 WIVK and the Sports Animal.